Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good.
All right. Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear. That's perfect.
I'm good.
So yay. So good morning, Bruce. How are you this morning? What's going on in Bruce world?
Oh, all kinds of fun stuff. Are we patched through to Pal Talk?
Yeah, we're right on Pal Talk, so people
Oh,
can
great.
hear
Okay.
us.
Well, excellent. I probably could do a quick summary of last weekend, which was the virtual ACM conference. That was a blast. That lasted Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the amusing part is I think it's a great metaphor for the illusion of time, because when I say lasted, it's since it's virtual, the entire thing is still attendable. And because it was all recorded, so if anybody's interested that didn't catch the quote unquote live version last weekend, I have a link on acimblog.com, and you can watch the 30-minute segments and listen to the quote live unquote call in phone Q&A sessions, and for I think the probably do it for another year or more. Who knows? Because the folks that organized the conference basically decided to have last year's available too. Because it's like, well, why not? I mean, just it's all timeless material, and just really wonderful, great presentations. So if anybody hasn't already availed themselves of that, I highly encourage it. So I guess that's probably my main announcement du jour. And I'm here again. In Livermore, California. I've been here about over a month now, and doing a lot of help with my mom, who just got out of the hospital again yesterday. So that's all. It's been a
Oh,
that's been
wow.
a good opportunity to look at my investment in bodies and that sort of thing, and the subtle and not so subtle issues and phobias around. Gee, what am I next kind of thing. All that kind of stuff that we all go through when we look at someone who's undergoing medical and hospitalization issues and that kind of things, those kind of things. So I think it's a great opportunity to number one, be kind and remember that we're all fighting the same battle, as the Greek philosopher Philo said. It's also attributed to another person if you Google it, but anyway,
Plato.
it's a good
Plato or
quote.
Philo, and
Yeah,
yeah, I think
yeah.
it's the same thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I
So
think I know it's Ian McKellen, I think, is the other name that's bantered around with that quote. But anyway,
I like
it doesn't really matter who said it. It's such a great concept, is that if we all have the two thought systems and the one decision-making mind, to remember that. There's only one of us, and ultimately, and we're all walking each other home, as Ram Dass said. That's the choice that we can make in any moment, isn't it?
at any moment. Oh, I was going to ask you something about that virtual conference. I did attend part of it whenever I had chances, when there was little breaks for me here off of Awakening Together. I did not like The one thing I did not like at all was that abrupt cutoff at 30 minutes. I
Oh, right, yeah.
honestly thought that there was a lore that could and should have been being talked about, and I don't even think people had a chance to even get going with their topic in a
Well,
lot of cases.
that's a good point. Yeah, and I think, understandably, as you point out, any conversation about the course, and I think that probably applied to all of them. Necessarily is going to be an appetizer intro, just a almost a teaser, if you will, of the things that could be talked about. And I certainly could have gone on for much longer. And I think what it really, hints at is that each one of the presenters and each one of the topics really could be an entire conference. And but yeah, it's yeah, and the arbitrariness of the cutoff point, I think, was just a, how do we make it so that people can set aside who want to watch and listen to the whole event live, enough blocks of time so that there's, you can set aside 3 days, and which is difficult for most people to do anymore anyway. and then also to, have a variety of presenters each day, and then have time for Q&A and some breaks. So I totally get what you're saying. And it is kind of an arbitrary thing, but I think it's actually probably pretty reasonable given, not just all the arbitrary cutoff, but about a half an hour, given how many presenters they were trying to fit into that 3 days.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think maybe my philosophy is fewer presenters, more meat.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it was lovely, but I would really love to have heard a lot more of maybe that's the point is, then go look for these people on YouTube or whatever and hear the full thing. Or I'm just wondering about the parts that are available now, and I'll have to go and check, if the whole recording is available or if it arbitrarily cuts off at 30 minutes. Because I would love to hear everything.
The 30 minutes is basically what was pre-recorded for the videos, and those were set up in such a way that the two dozen plus participants each had, a rough amount of time of 30 minutes. So the idea being that if you had that amount of time, you'd kind of plan what you're going to say. I'm laughing because of the nature of planning in this world. But for example, the first year I just sort of had some notes and a little outline, and I just talked for about 30 minutes, and it came out to almost exactly 30 minutes. And then the same with this year, when I thought, well, let's just try it as a conversation. And then Danielle did a wonderful job of interviewing, and each of the three organizers, I think, split up the different presenters, and all, I think they all did a great job of doing the interviews. And but obviously, like you say, we could have gone on for a lot longer. But and maybe that's what could emerge from this is, like you say, more in-depth conversations and a different format for another conference or the same one expanded, something like that. So yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. So what updates do you have, Lynn?
Well, let's see. Updates I have, probably not a whole lot of anything, because it's like I spend my days schlucking through the mud, and but I do have great insights from so many of the things that occur here or that I hear on the like things like the Miracle Share. It seems like every day, every conversation I have, and every speaker I listen to adds some amazing knowing to my repertoire. So I just really appreciate it. And today, tonight, we have Reverend Maria Felipe is going to be here. She's going to be our special guest for Saturday evening. And then tomorrow night, we have Joe Wolf. And, these are both people who were on that Miracle Share and who were, I think, really, really beautiful. And I would love to have heard more from. It's great that I'm going to have an opportunity to talk to both of them more in the next couple of days. But nothing much. Obviously, I have a battery that's going bad here.
Oh, is that the little tweeting sound is?
Yeah, the beep, 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 beep sound.
Okay.
but it goes. Yeah,
well, that's great. And maybe that's how some synergistic connection could happen with the Pal Talk Awakening Together forums and the Miracle Share. Yeah, that's a cool idea. And I would certainly welcome those opportunities. I usually just kind of focus on the half hour on Saturday mornings, but that'd be fun to do. So indeed.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, we will, in fact, Maybe I think maybe one of these here weekend evenings, Saturday or Sunday, I might just interview you. I
That'd be
think it'd
fun.
be kind of fun.
Or we could do a vice versa or both.
Yeah.
Why
So,
not? Why not?
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like you say, it's everything deepens that awareness when we, look at it with the Holy Spirit, aka inner kindness teacher, the Jesus of the Course. That thought system that we took with us into the dream, and we just use that to look at all the seemingly different things that are going on, and the seemingly different perspectives that different people and presenters from the clerk at the grocery store to someone at the intersection in our car, that we glance over at, or somebody that we spend our seemingly entire life with. It's all forgiveness material to forgive the dreamer, to realize, okay, we're all the same thing. We're all the same essence, and deserve the same respect and infinite esteem, and learn to generalize from that, huh?
Yeah, it's really very cool. If when you start recognizing that this is a classroom,
Yeah.
this is not my life circumstance. This is a classroom. It's like you're getting up and going to school in the morning. You go to school and you're in school all day, and you recognize this is not my home. This is not where I really live. I'm just
Right.
here for the lessons and whatever those may be, whether they're the lessons of your classes or the lessons of your relationships with your teachers, your relationships with the other students, the way you feel about what goes on during your lunch hour, recess. All those things are part of the classroom, and if you get up in the morning and think, I'm in school now. What is it that I'm here to learn, and look at it from that perspective rather than look at it like, oh, this is my reality. This is the life I deserve or whatever. Then you get a lot clearer on what's the purpose of everything. And what I'm seeing very clearly for myself is that everything is a projection of my own thoughts, and it doesn't matter
That's
what
it,
it
huh?
is. Everything is a projection of my own thoughts, and it's cool.
Yeah, we completely underestimate the power of our mind, don't we? And I think that's what the course comes at from so many places. Like the I think there, I think it's fairly early on, where it says, I would be devaluing or diminishing, or I forget the exact word, your power as the mental capacity. If I, were to step in and take care of, quote unquote, your issues as you perceive them, and violating the law of cause and effect. I'm paraphrasing that greatly, but the most fundamental law there is, and the idea being that, if we made up the entire universe as a, like you say, a classroom. I love the idea of that. I was giggling when you said recess. This is like the entire thing is a recess. That when we're, or a recess in the maladaptive sense, when we think that we are somehow not responsible for everything that we see. Not the specifics in terms of the, oh, I made up as an individual self, the entire cosmos. No, of course not. But as a collective mind that believes that it's fragmented, and now believes it's occupying a little tiny fraction, an infinitesimal fraction of the whole, that collective mind, that totally inseparable, inviolably, that's a word, an unchangeably innocent being that we all are. That somehow got this tiny mad idea going, and now thinks it's a fugitive from a wrathful God that, it also made up, this the ego's schizophrenic God. It's like, what a crazy classroom, huh? And it is laughable. And like you say, if we, starting in the day and have as many mindful lucid moments in between to remember this, like, oh, this is just a classroom. That's such a great reminder, Lynn. It really is. And that's really all we're here to do is to
to keep that perspective and gently, very gently, forgive ourselves and not condemn ourselves when we find that we've strayed from it for, you know, a few seconds or a few years or somewhere in between, and just say, nothing happened, you know? It's kind of like that classic thing of, you know, the footsteps in the sand why do I only see one set of footsteps, you know? And those times when I was discouraged and depressed and fearful and so forth, and, you know, the classic line, Jesus carries us. Well, yeah, I mean, that it really is, in a sense, you know, that we weren't there and we're not here to the extent that we think we're these separate things, these individual puppets, characters, and, you know, the dream figures, but we're the dreamer. We're all the dreamer, just dreaming that there's separate pieces to it, which is just silly and forgivable. That's the beauty of it, isn't it? I mean, I've been listening to over and over again, I think it's lesson 182, the one about the little child, you know, beseeching us to return home. And what a sweet, sweet workbook lesson, because that, I think that, well, part of the reason why I'm doing that, because as I updated my iPhone and now I can't figure out how to to get all my audios from my old computer, but it's actually been kind of interesting, because I have a couple of the Beethoven late quartets that Ken Wapnick suggested are, you know, profound. And the more I listen to them, the more I realize, wow, he's right on. There really is a lot in those. And then there's the lesson 182, and then another one of Ken's audios. And that's what I've been listening to over and over for a couple of weeks until I figure out how to get all my stuff off my old iMac. But anyway, be that as it may, that lesson 182 is just so sweet, because it really is that perfect, unassailable, undestroyable, unchangeable, eternally safe innocence that just keeps calling us home. It says, you know, you haven't done anything, and I want you to, you know, as the most recent Academy class from the Temecula, you know, we have all these opportunities to gladden ourselves, and please, please, please give yourself those opportunities. And the way we do it, like you say, Lynn, is to remember that this is a classroom, and this is not our real life. but we're able to reach our real life by forgiving ourselves for making up this elaborate classroom, and then using it moment to moment to forgive the dreamer and not identify with the dream figure, and just see how silly it is, huh?
It is, exactly. And the not identifying with the dream figure is so difficult when we spend so much time believing that we need to take care of it. And
right.
I mean, seriously, you know, if I don't take care of it, it reminds me in a very violent way sometimes that, you know, I need to be doing something to make sure that it's okay. And
right.
Of course, that's my own mind that is telling me that, oh, you know, if you don't take care of this thing, it's going to go south on you. And,
right.
You know, what's going to happen, you know, like you were talking about with your mom you know, all the stuff that she's going through, that's kind of a way of, and of course, you know, people don't like to hear this, but you set that up.
You set that up so
that you would see, you know,
yes.
what's going on in your own mind, and you see,
exactly.
Oh, I'm worried for her. Now I'm worried for me. Now I'm afraid right. this is going to happen. That's going to happen. And, you know, that's when you can grab yourself firmly by the whatever.
The scruff of my mind.
Yes. And say, you know, this is not the truth about what I am. And these
right.
fears that I seem to be suffering from are baseless and mindless, and they only appear to be real and important to me because I am not who I think I am. And
right.
so, you know, it's that constant reminder. And even Lee Catalano has been on here, and she's been talking about weight loss and shame loss and about food being one of the major sources of shame And it is absolutely, I agree with it completely, that, you know, I can go downstairs and make a nice big chocolate cake and sit there and eat the whole thing. And as much as I might enjoy eating the chocolate cake, there is in the background, a whole, symphony of shame going on about, you know, all sorts of things. Other people are hungry. I'm being a pig. I don't need this. It's, you know, detrimental.
Makes the dream real, huh?
Everything that is making it seem real to me is
yeah.
right there. And the guilt, you know, people don't understand, and I don't understand a lot of time. It is the guilt that makes it appear real to me.
Right.
If I didn't associate the guilt with it, I wouldn't have that sense of reality about it.
Yeah. And it's anything that identifies us with the body and says, this is what you are, or who you are, because the what we are, esoterically and truly is spirit, you know, that, and body is just, like you say, it's just an incredibly elaborate classroom. And, you know, so I've been enjoying noticing when I, as you point out, you know, when I get sucked into thinking, oh man, I guess, you know, that's pretty serious. That's what's going on. And this will need to be done, and that, and these prescriptions need to be filled now. And now that my mom's home, and all the appointments need to be made, and all that stuff. And yet at the same time, and through the process of the almost 3 weeks that my mom was hospitalized, it was like, just the visits there daily, talking to her and helping out with my sister and brother-in-law, who were tremendous, and my mom's attitude also, which was, you know, tremendous, was, you know, through that, there was lucid moments where, you know, like, for example, my mom said at one point, says, with this great attitude, she says, well, you know, I need to do all these things. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but I'm learning to, how did she put it? Something like, well, not that it wasn't believing, not believing it, but it was something about making no big deal about it. In other words, you know, she's been a student of metaphysics for a long time too. And there's times I think when, you know, like her, I have done the bliss in anything of, you know, not really looking at the feelings, and I'm become more and more cognizant of that and how that's a, you know, an ego end run around kind of thing. But at the same time, when you really are aware that the body is just a silly, silly get-up, that we do a Halloween number on ourselves 365, 24/7, and when you truly can, you know, authentically laugh at that and see it as silly, you know, how can I limit this infinite spirit to this little package that needs all this maintenance, you know, very high maintenance, and not take it seriously in those moments when, you know, it is funny, and when we have laughed about it, and you know, just, you know, learn to see it for what it is, and with compassion as well as those you know, lucid moments. So
that's interesting.
Good stuff, huh?
Yeah, it is good stuff. And you know what's interesting to me too is that you know, even a lot of Course in Miracles students will argue with you and say, well, yeah, but I have to take care of this body. I have to do this and I have to do that. And, you know, I think about Ken. Ken got cancer and decided with a very open, lucid thinking that, you know, he really didn't want to go through all the crap that a lot of people go through with cancer treatment. I don't know what he did.
Uh-huh.
I think it was something more natural or simple or less drastic. And, you know, he just had perfect trust that it was all exactly as it should be. What right. happens, even with Course in Miracles students who are given this lesson day after day after day after day, that I'm not a body, I'm free, and I'm still as God created me, and I'm not, you know, the body is a neutral. We just had that lesson a couple days ago, that the body itself is neutral and only has the meaning that I give to it. And we right. say we believe all these things, and yet we also believe that I have an obligation to the body, I need to take care of the body, I need to make sure that the body is serviceable. But Jesus in the Course tells us, you know, that's not even your concern. Don't even worry about that. And he says, and I think this is really pretty cool. I think it's in chapter 8. Now I think I'll go find it, where he says, I will substitute for your ego if you let me. And right. If you let me do this, then I will make sure that nothing happens to you that well, first off, nothing is going to happen to us that's not a part of the script. Bottom line, nothing is going to happen to us that's not a part of the script. The script is written. It is what we're living out. We're not changing the script. We're not changing, you know, Lynn gets breast cancer thing or whatever. That's not going to be changed by my thinking, your thinking, or anything else, because that's the way the script is. So he says, you know, if you let me just do this, then you can go along without having to worry about it. And when that happens, oh, it's chapter 4, section 1. I'm going to read that if you don't mind.
Sure.
You don't mind going on a little longer today? I would really.
Oh, no, that's fine. And by the way, thanks again for patching me through on Skype. This I enjoy the monologue, but I think the conversation is even better. So and I'm really enjoying what you're sharing, of course, too. So yeah, please.
That's good.
Please,
yeah. So he says, let's see, let me find exactly where it is, because this it's really it's chapter 4.
Is it chapter 4?
And it's paragraph 13. Chapter 4, section 1, paragraph 13. And he says, I will substitute for your ego if you wish, but never for your spirit. A father can safely leave a child with an elder brother who has shown himself responsible, but this involves no confusion about the child's origin. The brother can protect the child's body and his ego, but he does not confuse himself with the father because he does this. And then he says, this is just amazing and spectacular. He says, I can be entrusted with your body and your ego only because this enables you not to be concerned with them and lets me teach you their unimportance.
Beautiful. I have that underlined too.
Yeah. So yep. He's saying, stop thinking that you have to do something to protect and preserve this body.
Right, right. And it's an identity shift, isn't it? Because what the whole thrust of the course is if it's about the mind, then you know the reason we can entrust those ideas to Holy Spirit is that they're they just need to go in the cosmic recycle bin because there's really no validity to the idea that we're finite, that we're separate, that we're seemingly individuals. And once we, you know, allow Holy Spirit at the helm of the controls of our mind, then, you know, we can afford to relax, because then we remember that our identity is that eternal, infinite, shared, all-inclusive being. And it's no longer just an intellectual thing, as we actually feel in those moments that there really is nothing to be concerned about. And because we're no longer identified with a fake identity, we're no longer paying homage to the ego's identity thief agenda.
Exactly.
I had to chuckle a little bit when you were talking about the idea of the whole shame thing and the food pyramid and all that kind of stuff. And I was thinking, well, food is part of ego's food pyramid, or you know, and that whole thing of I need to eat this or I don't need to not eat that, and if we can just watch that with amusement and just say, okay, there's part of the belief that suggests that I am a specific person with specific biochemistry with specific needs, and just more and more mindfully just kind of, you know, not necessarily laugh out loud where it's not appropriate, but just sort of say, oh yeah, there's that thought system that's silly. And it, you know, we were asked to lead ourselves gently, you know, with Holy Spirit's help to step out of the fear. And by just kind of playing along with those beliefs without in a way that threatens them unduly, by doing the things that seem comfortable at the time at our own pace, so to speak. That seems like that really helps us undo the ego and our identification with that silliness actually the most quickly, because it basically is saying, okay, I'm going to honor what you think is your reality. And so you can entrust that identity with me, and voila, you know, you'll be given opportunities moment to moment to look at that and generalize and say, oh yeah, that again, that not just that type of food or that situation, you know, medical or biological or whatever, you know, anything that anchors us into a body and makes it real, we can just kind of look at it and say, oh yeah, there that little separate seeming self goes again, trying to make a big deal out of nothing.
Out of nothing. Yeah. And so this trusting, though, that he's talking about, you know, he says, I can be entrusted with your body and your ego only because this enables you not to be concerned with them and lets me teach you their unimportance. So, you know, there it's a give and take kind of thing, because I definitely have to then give up my belief that somehow or the other I can or should, you know, get that should out of the way, that I should be doing one thing or another to preserve my health, to make my body strong, to do all the different things, you know, because yes, you know, I think what he's saying here is, let me take care of it. And you just bother your mind with, you know, the things you're here to learn. You know, it's almost like, excuse me, if I thought that I needed to go out and work all day you know, do things to earn a paycheck because I need to have a house and a home, and I'm thinking I have all these plans for meeting the needs that I perceive I have, and Jesus is saying, you know, give up those plans. You know, you let me take care of your needs. And if you let me take care of your needs, then you will be able to see that, first off, you have nothing to do with any of it. And again, going back into the idea that the script is already written, you know, that script includes what I'm going to have for lunch today. That script includes...
Right. And it includes our alleged plans, right?
Exactly. Everything you think you're doing is being done already. So he's saying, give up your personal thought that you have anything to do with this, and just let me take care of it. And when I do that, you know, then we can learn this lesson together. Here's another line that I love in this section. He says, I could not understand their importance to you if I had not once been tempted to believe in them myself. So it's Jesus talking about, he was a man. He was tempted. He believed in his body, and he learned that it was not necessary for him to be involved with it. And so he's telling us, and this also gives up the idea that, you know, Jesus came in here with this divine knowing that he was not a body. No, he actually did believe he was a body. He was tempted to believe this stuff, and he had to overcome this. And he's saying, I did it, and you can do it too, and I can help you. So this is great news for anybody who's having
it. And that's a great reminder. It is great news. It's a reminder that he nor any other, you know, so-called being is not special, because we're all that enlightened being. We're all helping each other wake up to the fact that we never left that being. And I mean, that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
That is the beauty of it. And
you still there,
Yeah. Carrie writes in the room, well, when we hit our quote unquote dream head, it hurts. No matter how we think about its reality, it does seem to hurt a little less and for shorter time if you are more awake and don't identify with the quote unquote hurt. When you laugh with pain rather than get mad at it, it subsides faster. Just my experience, folks. And yeah, that's my experience too, Carrie. That
Exactly.
when I laugh at it and I don't get involved in it, it does go away. But Jesus is talking about something even on a different level altogether than what we are. I am experiencing. I am not going to say the grand we, because I don't know what you're experiencing. But the level I'm experiencing it on is still very personal, and belief that I am somehow or the other being hurt if I hit my head. What he actually did was he went beyond the experience of the body. He absolutely knew that the body was illusion, and he was able to control that part of the illusion, which he says to us also in the teacher's manual, kind of how he did it. And there's some other notes that he that Helen has about how he did it. But the fact is, if you hit Jesus in the head, he did not experience pain, because he did not experience the body as a self. He experienced the body as an illusion. And so it's like
Right.
you hit a picture in the head, or you hit a virtual a hologram in the head. There's no sensation because there's no person there to perceive it, the sensation. The body itself is just a set of vibrating atoms and energy, and
Right.
so it has no that you know that you can put you can anesthetize a person, of them completely out, and do all sorts of things to them, and they don't have any notion of what's being done. I'm not thinking Bill Cosby, I'm
Right.
thinking about my heart surgeon. It's the
That's good.
same
I'm
thing.
laughing also. I'm laughing also because when you mentioned anesthesiologist, hopefully still asleep in the next room, which is why I'm kind of talking in a low tone. My brother-in-law and sister. My brother-in-law is an anesthesiologist, and my sister is a nurse. And when I worked at a TV company, a TV technology company called Grass Valley Group for a couple of decades in Northern California, not too far from here now. I used to joke with John, my brother-in-law, that we were in the same industry, you know, anesthesiology, right? Putting people under. But isn't that just a microcosm of the ego's whole thing of having us anesthetized or mindlessly slogging around, forgetting that we're identifying with the puppet. And sure, if you want to make the puppet look better, if Mr. Bill has his head pulled off, you go, oh no, kind of thing, but it's a puppet. I mean, and I think that's the attitude that Jesus and Ken and what also reminds me of Jack Schwartz, who I did meet years ago in Merced, California, actually, who gave a talk about his experience in the Nazi concentration camps, and many years ago, and he talked about had this epiphany he had one time when he was being whipped, and blood was running down his back from the lashes he was getting in Nazi Germany at this concentration camp, and he realized at one moment that the guard was in as much pain as he was. Not physically, but psychologically, and that apparently must have hit him at just the right moment, where he realized that at that moment, because of the sameness, the shared interest that the Course talks about, that he entrusted his body to that spirit, and in that moment, he not only the pain in his mind not only ceased, but and his interpretation of it as pain, but also the bleeding stopped. And then that's probably a cake frosting kind of a thing for most of us. We probably, most people, even if they do have that awareness, like Carrie was talking about, it seems to be less, or it doesn't seem to have that interpretation. But I think the idea is that we can all do that by remembering that if we share the same two thought systems in the same decision-making mind, and we can choose for the thought system that says the shared interest of going home and of waking up from the dream is what's important at any given moment, then that can, lead us very gently out by helping us to look at the thing, the seemingly challenging things that are happening or seem to be happening, and say, this is part of my classroom. This is part of this projected dream that I'm here to see as a dream.
And as such, it then becomes like those early workbook lessons suggested, you know, that we've given it all the meaning it has. That anything that isn't real, we have to, you know, breathe meaning into it. We have to say, oh, this is a body. And that was one of the things that struck me with Jack Schwartz's talk that he gave that day. Is he said, you know, he got to the point where it's no longer my body; it's a body in that state. And he had this sort of, you know, quintessential epiphany where he was kind of looking down on the scene that, you know, some people describe in out-of-body experiences, things like that. But it's that willingness to see it from above the battleground of duality. It's not a victim and victimizer. It's not a Nazi guard and a Nazi victim, you know, a Nazi prison camp victim. It's or whatever we seem to be doing or having done to us, they're all just interpretations of an incredibly elaborate thought system that's made an incredibly elaborate holographic universe that just really, like you were saying earlier, then just plays out and mirrors our wishes. And the script that we all wrote together before time was and actually isn't.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is the story. You know, when I look at the script and the idea of the script, that's something I work with a lot because it is so beautifully explains what seems to be happening here. And it makes so much sense.
Yes.
But the script itself is basically, as far as I can see, the answer to the question that we ask, you know, what would it be like, or is it possible that I could make a world without God, or I could live without God, or I could make myself special in God's eyes? You know, those are all kind of variations of the same thing, basically saying, right, I want something different than what was made. And so that question, thinking about the infinite power of the holy mind of the Son of God, you know, if the holy mind of the Son of God was to ask, you know, how many variations to the color red are there? There will be an infinite variety of variations of the color red that just appear or are, because it's infinite. Our mind is infinite and powerful. So if we ask, you know, what could happen if I was separate from God, the possibilities, well, are not there. The only possibility that is not in that equation is the possibility that I could destroy what God made, or I could change what God made. But I can make up a lot of scenarios that says, you know, if God's love is not involved in this, children starve. If God's love is not involved in this, I only can talk to Bruce through a computer. If God's love is not involved in this, then, you know, the sun will shine. If God's love is not involved in this, then there will be hurricanes. These are all pointing out the things that we made lovelessly. Mm-hmm. But there's an infinite number of them because we have an infinite mind. So what I have begun to do is look at the sameness of all these situations. Every single one of them is telling me, this is what happens when I don't involve God in God's love in my life. And so it's all the same thing. It's just different variations of the color red. And, you know, I can stop looking for the color red and just recognize,
right,
that, you know, that none of them are the whole thing. All of them are just a reflection of something inadequate. And I can stop that.
Yeah, that's it. And what you're saying reminds me of a theme that runs through a lot of Ken Wapnick's work, is, you know, learning to generalize and to see that, you know, the things that seem to be different really are the same. And we have countless variations of those that you know seem to be, oh well, that's different, you know, this is exempt from mindfulness or whatever, you know.
Right. That's us. Donald Trump and that's Paul Ryan, they're completely different, you know, or Barack Obama, they're completely different. They're not. None of it is different. It's all the same thing, no matter if you think it's good or bad or right or wrong. It's all a variation of the same thing, is what's the world like without God.
Right. And we're, like you point out also eloquently and appropriately, that, you know, the screenwriting theatrical metaphor, the dream drama, you know, there's so many good metaphors of the idea that this is a play, this is a production, this is an elaborate staged reenactment of a tiny mad idea. And one of the quotes that Ken has, I forget which author, was it Schoenberg or something? I forget the exact person, but it's someone said that we're all the secret theatricals managers of our mind. And I thought, well, that's pretty right on, because we basically a secret, because, you know, we try to hide the fact that, you know, we were complicit in the script writing, and you know, we're not entitled to our grievances and to our upset. You know, not that we're not going to get angry, but you know, it's just, well, because that, again, he's addressing what we really are, and what we really are is not entitled to anger, because we're entitled to miracles, and when we choose, you know, murder or miracles, you know, it says elsewhere. It's like, but every time that we, unfortunately, it's a dream of murder, but because, you know, nothing real can be threatened, but it sure seems real sometimes. Sometimes it seems incredibly vivid and you know, real, but it's a hallucination. And on another thing that happened a couple evenings ago, when my sister and brother-in-law and I were visiting my mom in the hospital, and she was recounting after she was getting out of surgery, you know, she was recovering from the anesthesia and kind of in a surreal, spacey kind of state, and she was saying, "Yeah, I was having this. I thought I heard these kids, you know, in the recovery room, and they were hollering and carrying on, and it didn't bother her, but she just was noticing this and all these other things that, you know, that when she thought about it, you know, couldn't have been there and couldn't have been happening." And so my sister was saying, "Well, yeah, you were just hallucinating, Mom." And then I had to just suppress it, laughing out loud. It's like, oh yeah, right. Thank you, Gail, my sister, for that reminder that, you know, we're all hallucinating here 24/7. This is just a mass hallucination, and we're seeing, you know, an insane classroom. But that's where the sanity comes in. That you know, we can entrust our body and our ego and our worldly cares to, and just realize, yeah, there's nothing here that doesn't merit at least an inner laugh, you know, like Bill Thetford's biography title, "You Never Forget to Laugh." Because I mean, if we can see the hallucination for what it is, it just is hilarious. But in the most gentle way, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the thing too. The laughter is what is necessary. That, you know, that's the whole thing. The tiny mad idea at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh. And yeah. And how can you, when you look at it from the viewpoint of being the Son of God, and, you know, stubbing your toe, or, you know, oh my God, isn't that hilarious that I could think that I have a toe that can be hurt by being rammed into the coffee table? Mm-hmm. You know, and of course you'd say, yeah, that toe hurts and I don't like that. But the fact is that I think I have a toe, and I think that.
So we're all toe heads.
It can be damaged. Something, and when I look at it, I mean, I you know, I'm famous for falling down. That's kind of something that happens because I have vestibular problems, so I don't have the sense of balance that it comes natural in people. And hey, Ken Mallory is in the room. So, and also because I'm blind in one eye, I have no depth perception. So I can't tell like steps down, and I've fallen down so many times. It's hilarious. And I was at a course meeting in Boston, a few weeks ago, and, we were at Mary Beth Scalici's house. Well, she has kind of a raised up living room kind of thing. So it's probably, I don't know, 8, maybe 10 inches step up. And so we were in that little living, we were having our course meeting, and my phone started ringing. And my phone was over by where I put my coat, my purse and everything. So I got up to go and turn off my phone, and I forgot about that step. And so I'm walking along, and all of a sudden, kabloom, boom, boom. And it was like Whoops. Knees and elbows. And, you know, I mean, I was just like falling down. And the whole time I'm doing that, I'm laughing. I'm laughing at, oh my God, look at this. I think I can fall down and bang my elbows and my knees. And they were all like aghast, like, oh my God. But then they heard me laughing. And you know, I wasn't laughing because I was embarrassed. I was laughing at this, the sheer hilariousness of that thing, that just, you know, losing it, biffing it totally, and, you know, recognizing that that's what happens. We're always falling down. That's gravity. Otherwise, we would be floating in space if we weren't always falling down. And sometimes we fall downer than others. But like the old meme of the floor that says, if you fall, I will catch you. The floor.
I like that one too. That's good.
I'm always, you know, being caught by the floor. So
yeah,
it's the same thing, you know.
We are always in a perpetual state of you know, fighting gravity in the dream, huh? And yet it's just a part of the script. It's part of that elaborate, you know, award-winning, beyond award-winning, holographic hallucination that we all seem to be having, that suggests that space and time and separate bodies and individuals and all that could possibly be real, and within that there's this thing called gravity that holds certain seemingly separate individual members to a seemingly separate planet and a seemingly separate galaxy and yada yada yada, and God, what an incredibly, you know, imaginative dream. But it's just, like you say, it's something that we can mindfully see as a classroom and see that there's in every moment an opportunity to you know, entrust you know, to allow ourselves to trust that erring kindness teacher and AKA Jesus in the Course and, you know, Holy Spirit, and just say, okay, you're at the helm here. I'll sit in the passenger seat and just watch the ego shenanigans and take what my interpretations as ego, as identified with that crazy thought, are, put them on the altar. You know, just set them up on the dashboard for you to look at as we're cruising along. And seemingly covering distance, time and space, and just we can laugh at them together, you know.
Exactly.
And you know, he says, you know, together we have the lamp that will dispel the darkness, and it's only when we're willing to just as you're doing in your wonderful example, and of you know, catching yourself off balance and saying, oh yeah, this is not the real me. This is this. Character in this script that, you know, you call Lynn and I guess I do too, and that is having this experience, and I'm doing, my script seems to be different, but it's the same stumbling around in the dark, you know. And I love how in the beginning of, I think it's chapter 21, where right before the forgotten song, it says, you know, the introductory paragraph says your cues for inference are wrong, you know. So what could we do but stumble if we're thinking that we're separate and apart, and you know, we're blundering around in the dark metaphorically, thinking that there's a world that has dangers and has pitfalls and things we need to look out for and things that we need to feel bad about and sad about and euphoric about, you know, anything that's temporary, you know, it's just as much special. It's just, you know, looking through the other end of the distorted lens, you know, and thinking that there's a different something that needs our attention, huh?
Yeah, it's hilarious, because when you think about it, and you know, this is, I've been reading and hearing a lot about this kind of stuff. It seems beautiful and complex. Okay. We look at it, we say, wow, this is beautiful and complex. There's so many cool things. There's stars, there's galaxies, there's dogs, there's fleas, you know, wow, look at all these incredibly complex things. And yet, you know, think about what we're looking at through the limitation of these fixed senses that are very, very, very limited. Okay, the vision, you know, you can only see a very small part of the spectrum. You know,
one octave, basically.
Yeah, very small.
It's about an octave.
Yeah, the sound, you know, you can only, you know, my dog can hear things I can't hear. You can only hear, bumblebees can see things that I can't see, or, you know, it's the sensations of the body, you know, they're so very limited. And so we're looking at it going, wow, this is really huge and amazing. But we're looking at it from this very limited viewpoint that can only see these things as being huge, huge and amazing. When you get on the other side and you're looking at from the Christ mind perspective, you see how small, it's like looking at, you know, play school figures or, you know, Tinker Toys or something, you know, it's very, limited viewpoint of what, you know, what is or what I think is. And, you know, I want to, you know, speculate and go out and look at all the different things, you know, can I look at the atom? Can I look at the quantum, particles or whatever, you know, I can look at it all I want and I can analyze it all I want, but looking at and analyzing a dream is not getting me to reality. It's just getting me more involved in the dream. So, so what he's, I'm going to continue on this paragraph because I think, I'm just talking about chapter four, section one, paragraph 13. Because he goes on after he talks about, you know, you can let me take care of everything. You don't have to worry about it. He says, if let us undertake to learn this lesson together so we can be free of them together. And why is it that Jesus is so adamant that he wants us to be free of these things? And he says right in the next sentences, I need devoted teachers who share my aim of healing the mind. Throughout this book, there is a call for teachers, and he's calling for us to shift our minds so that we can help our brothers shift their mind. And why does he need this? Because Jesus literally is stuck until the entire sonship wakes up. You know, he's not, it's not like he's stuck because, you know, it's because he wants to be here. He wants to help us. And he tells us also that there are others too, like Artin and Persa. There are ascended masters who are there waiting in our beck and call for us to ask them for help. They're all here. Why? Because they want us to succeed in this. Because once we've succeeded in this, the universe disappears. And there's no longer a need for teachers or students or anything. There's only the need for reality. So I need to.
And that's not even a need.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what's left over after we subtract all the needs from ego's agenda.
Exactly. So that's what he says. Spirit is far beyond the need of your protection or mind. Mine, right. Remember this, in this world you need not have tribulation because I have overcome the world. He's saying all the crap that I think I'm going through that I need to go through, I don't need to go through because he already did it for me. And he says, that is why you should be of good cheer. So, you know, Jesus did this. All these ascended masters have done this. All they're waiting for is for us to say yes. And to live our lives accordingly, and to live our lives accordingly is to give it over to allow him to be in charge. That's why, right. You know, this holy instant I would give to you, be you in charge. That final lesson is all about letting go. And that's all this book is teaching us, is how to let go of our belief in the world so that we can join with Jesus and do, you know, do this work.
Exactly, exactly. And thank you for bringing that paragraph up, because that's, and the quote at the end, because that's, that really is, you know, it's a very uplifting awareness. And just as a point of clarification, which I'm sure probably everyone listening realizes, is that, you know, you know, needing devoted teachers and the author of the course really is beyond space and time ahead. And for the purposes of what we're doing, you know, there never needed to be a historical figure named Jesus. And this was applicable, you know, at the beginning of time when the tiny mad idea seemed to happen. So it has nothing to do with any particular, you know, religious figure or historical figure or anything like that. It's just a reminder that that thought system is in us all the time, and that's what we trust in, that principle, that idea that reminds us that there's nothing to the dream to be concerned about. And that's why we can be of good cheer. We can afford to be at peace and realize that our innocence was never compromised and it was never at risk. The perfect peace that we thought we have forsaken, you know, it's still just waiting there, you know, like the Maytag repairman, just okay, you know, like these ascended masters you're talking about. There's just, you know, the those ideas that represent the awareness that we never left are just patiently waiting for us to, you know, okay, give me a call. I'm sitting here by the phone.
Really? Yep. I'm waiting patiently, and he is waiting exactly. Very patiently. Yes.
Well, thank you, Lynn. It looks like Ken's making some great comments here. That the Zen koans that Ken Wapnick talks about, you know, the eyes can't see, ears can't hear, brains don't think. You know, it really is an example that you know we're all in the same classroom of remembering that these biological systems are just a, you know, part of our curriculum to undo a crazy thought system. Huh?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Bruce, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to Saturday mornings with you now. And
Yes, me too. Me too. We should have done this a long time ago. So anyway, thank you today and in advance for the future Skype connections that lets us have a conversation rather than a monologue. So
I love it. I love it. And it's fun talking with you too. And I did record this, so I'll actually send you the MP3 of it if you want.
Perfect. You know, I'd love that. Yes.
It's good for me to hear to remember what was said. So anyway, thank you so much.
That's why I do it.
Exactly. All right.
We're all in the same remedial classroom. Huh?
I love you, brother. It's so good. And I'll give you a call later. There's some other stuff that I don't know if Dove has talked to you, but I'll give you a call later and we can chat about some stuff. Anyway, that I love great. You, and I'm going to let go of the mic and turn it over to Ken Mallory.
Likewise.